Proverbs chapter 15, verse 28. The heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. Now, we've left off this morning, and we were talking about ways to put on meekness, or ways to pursue, to walk in meekness. And one of the things that we left off with was the fact that meekness knows how to think during a time when we are provoked, or a time where we can get, you know, excited. And so one of the things that is helpful, one way to put on gentleness or meekness in a time that you're provoked, is to take the time to pray and think before you open your mouth. That is a biblical concept. Proverbs hits that from several different angles. We saw one here. The heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. The idea of studying to answer, the idea of thinking, taking time, praying, not just saying the first thing that comes to our mind, not just reacting based upon what our initial response is. If we believe and we understand that we are fallen by nature, that we're depraved, then we ought to realize in the moment, or maybe even outside of the moment, it may be more helpful, but we ought to realize that our initial response is probably never going to be meekness, that reaction that we typically have. And so one of the helps to that is just slowing down, studying to keep a right answer, or to think about how to answer in a right way. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 17, would say this: He that speaketh truth showeth forth righteousness, but a false witness deceit. He that speaketh truth showeth forth righteousness. And so, again, taking the time to be able to think, to be able to speak or answer with a right answer, to answer in righteousness, that's typically not our initial response. And so if we're going to be meek, just being humble enough to stop and take the time to think. You can see that principle played out in all kinds of secular ways, as far as just, you've all heard the strategy of counting to 10 before you say anything. The fact that you can make it from 1 to 10 is not necessarily that helpful, but if you give yourself a little bit of space, and if you can think, and then obviously if you can add a little bit of prayer in there, a quick prayer, or taking the time to pray and extensively, you can see how that could be really helpful in being gentle and being meek. Maybe you've never had this experience before, but I heard one guy say that there's been plenty of times in his life that he was one sentence away from going to bed with a good night, and then he had to talk. Then he had to say that one last thing. Gentleness, meekness, the idea of thinking through these kinds of things can help us there. All right, one of the humble elements in being gentle or in being meek is just being willing to own your contribution to a conflict. Being willing to own that it is not always, but most of the time, it is likely that if I'm in a conflict, I have contributed something to that conflict. Whether it be the way I've responded, whether it be, we could go in 100 different directions with that. A few helpful questions that we could ask ourselves when we're in a conflict and when we're thinking about meekness and humility. One of the questions is, has the other person, the other party, have they really sinned against me? Have they actually sinned against me? Do I have a tendency to be overly sensitive? We all tend to be overly sensitive. It's just in different areas. You may not think of yourself as a sensitive person, but more than likely you are hypersensitive in particular areas where you can be not bothered in others. So am I overly sensitive? Is it really a sin, or was it just something that I didn't like? There's a big difference there. It can be, anyway. Do I have all the facts, or am I just coming to a hasty conclusion? Do I have all the facts about what's going on? It takes humility to stop and ask yourself, do I really know all the facts of what's happened? One of the things that you'll notice, if you're very aware of the national media at all, is that what they love to do is hear about the first quarter of a story, and before they hear any of the other facts, they come out with breaking news, and sometimes it's just completely off the wall, spun in a way that is just not true, because they want to be the first people out with a story. And a lot of times we can mimic that, as we want to just hurry up and snap back with our responses and snap back with our reactions, but we haven't even taken the time to figure out what's actually going on. That can happen if you hear some gossip about somebody, and rather than trying to figure out if that's true or not, you just automatically take it as true and get upset. That also happens as we assume we know what another person meant when they said something. We can assume we know what their motives were. We can assume we know what they were trying to do. And in actuality, we aren't anywhere close. Now, that's one of those things that happens where you're going along just fine, having a great conversation, or at least a civil conversation. And then before you know it, you say something. You're not exactly sure what you said, but it must have been bad, because the conversation goes south really, really quickly. Just taking the time to say, wait a second, I don't know that you understood what I said, or do I understand what you said? One of the other things that is helpful, and this is something that we can get carried away in sometimes, but is am I magnifying a tolerable trial to the level of something that's unbearable? Am I magnifying a trial that is tolerable? It's painful, it's not comfortable, but it's tolerable. Am I magnifying that to the extent and convincing myself that it's unbearable? We do that. I do that. I don't know if you do that. I think I know that you do that, but I know that I do that. There are some people that we can convince ourselves that are just intolerable, and the fact is they're tolerable. They're just not what we wish they were. There are some situations that we can convince ourselves are just intolerable. We can't handle this. I don't want to have to handle this anymore, and the fact is it's that we've got it so played up in our mind that we just can't. We can't catch up. We can't. We've convinced ourselves we can't handle it. One of the other helps as far as gentleness goes, being meek. We're talking person to person here. It's not just controlling how you think, but it's also controlling having a command over how you communicate. That is, the words that come out of your mouth, your facial expressions, your tone of voice, all those things spark conflict, right? So if you think about just different basic responses you might get from a simple question, I might ask one of the young folks. Well, let's just say I ask McCain. McCain, what did you think of the sermon this morning? And he said, oh, it was wonderful. And I think, okay, that's good. You know, McCain liked it. He thought it was a wonderful sermon. And let's say I say, hey, McCain, what did you think of the sermon? And he said, oh, it was wonderful. Well, he probably didn't think it was wonderful, did he? Or, I see people doing this more. I don't remember doing this, but when they want to kind of make fun or poke fun or whatever. And so if I were to say, hey, McCain, what'd you think of the sermon? And he says, oh, it was great. Now, none of those happened. McCain thought the first one. Okay, McCain thought it was wonderful in reality. He always thinks that about my preaching. So you can say the same thing in different ways, right? And the example that I just gave you was silly, but you don't have to do a whole lot of thinking to try to to realize that the tone of somebody's voice, the expression on their face, can make a world of difference in how you take the exact same words that come out of their mouth. And the same thing is true for other people concerning us. Look in Proverbs chapter 16. So one of the ways that we're talking about this is in just what we say, the words that we choose. Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. Pleasant words are as honeycomb. One thing that ought to tell us is we ought to be, if we want to be meek, if we want to be gentle, we ought to be pretty thoughtful about what we say, the words that we choose. In Proverbs chapter 15, the writer of Proverbs here would hit the tone of our voice. Look what he says. A soft answer in Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. A soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. You know, one of the things that's at least been my experience is that if I can catch myself and be aware of myself enough to say what needs to be said in a gentle way, typically folks will receive it. Okay, and I have plenty of opportunity to say difficult things to people that they don't necessarily want to hear. And if I go into it with the mindset that I'm going to straighten this person out, and by the time we get finished, this person's going to know just how silly they are, just how dumb they are, or whatever else, I'm going to finally say what nobody else wants to say, that doesn't typically go very well at all. But if I can go into something like that with a motive that, yes, this does need to be said, but not because I'm the one that needs to say it. This needs to be said because it would be good for this person to hear this. You can say difficult things in kind ways, and typically, you can't control this, it's not all the time, but typically, people will hear you. Typically, things can be said. Because here's the reality. There are times where the only thing that can be done is that the truth needs to be spoken, right? I mean, you can't run away from what needs to be said forever. If you're somebody that likes to avoid conflict, you cannot avoid it forever. It will eventually come to a head, and something has to be said. And the question is, if we're going to be meek, it's not what are we going to say only, but how are we going to say it? Look in Proverbs chapter 16, verse 21. The wise in heart shall be called prudent, and the sweetness of the lips increaseth learning. The wise in heart shall be called prudent, and the sweetness of the lips increaseth learning. You see what he's saying there? How you say what you say matters. Not just to the other person, but brothers and sisters, it matters to God. I mean, God says a lot about Proverbs and how we speak, what we speak, but also how we speak. Look in Colossians chapter 4. Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. Again, this is not what we say, this is how we say it. Communicating in a gracious way. That's hard to do when you're irritated, isn't it? It is. It's hard to do when you're irritated. It's hard to do when you're tired of the person you're getting ready to address, or when you've been offended, or when you've taken something personal. It is hard to speak in a gracious way. And yet, Colossians does not leave us any loopholes in Colossians 4:6. When should you be doing this? Always. So that you may know how to answer who? Every man. That's part of what it means to be meek. Look in Proverbs chapter 15 again. If you want to just keep your finger there, I'm going to turn to Genesis 4 and read this. And we're talking here again. It's not just what you say, it's how you say it. And then, you know, there are some things, and this is not a new revelation for you, but there are some things that that tend to show up on our face, right? If you're very aware of folks, you can typically tell when somebody's angry by the way they look before you've ever said a word. If you're, you know, if you're paying attention to that sort of thing. And Genesis chapter 4, verse 6, God speaks to Cain here. He says, "And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, or why are you angry, and why is thy countenance fallen?" A couple of things we learn from this. It may seem like common sense to you, but we learn, number one, that Cain was angry, and number two, we learn that God could see that anger all over Cain's face. It affected his countenance. It affected his body language. It affected the way he looked. Now, back to Proverbs 15. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 13. "A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart the spirit is broken." Again, the idea of our emotions, our emotional state showing up in our countenance, in the way that we look, in our facial expressions. I don't know about you, but for me, it is really difficult to try to have a gracious conversation with somebody whose face looks like they're just bored, or they're angry, or they're uninterested, or fill in the rest. Have you ever been talking to somebody and then just realized by looking at them that they were just, could care less what you were saying? It's not a lot of motivation to keep talking, is it? One of the things I've learned is that we don't always get that right, okay? One of the lessons that the Lord has taught me being the afternoon preacher is that your face does not always equal what you're thinking, okay? You're tired in the afternoon. You've already listened to an hour message. I know that. One of the things that I don't tend to do is pay attention to what anybody's face really looks like. I don't, because if I do that, then I start having a conversation with myself up here, and I can start thinking, what did I say? What was it? Did I get something mixed up? Am I saying something this person doesn't like? Or you know, you can get paranoid, and before you know it, paranoia turns into defensiveness, and I may as well just sit down because I'm not concentrating any on what God's message that I'm trying to get to you is. I'm concentrating on what I think you're thinking about me. So there are times where it's just best for us to not pay a lot of attention to that. But as much as we can control it, we ought to be aware of what we look like, what our facial expression is saying when we're in some sort of a conflict with somebody else. That will make a difference. All right, we've got two more and we'll be done. This is similar to what we said earlier, but gentleness or meekness is remaining quiet when you're angry in order to ponder an appropriate answer. Gentleness or meekness is the ability to stay quiet, to close your mouth until you can think of the appropriate answer. We've all, most of us, know what it is to say something and then half a second later wish you could put all those words back in your mouth. In the moment we get upset, in the moment we have an initial reaction, and we just blurt something out, and we realize, I should not have done that. Meekness takes the time to think about what we're going to say. Look in Proverbs 17. Proverbs 17, verse 27. "He that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. Even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise, and he that shutteth his lips is an esteemed man of understanding." So in both of these passages, the gist of the passage is not don't talk so you'll look smart. The gist of the passage is think about what you're going to say before you say it. Think about what you're going to say before you say it. There's no virtue in sparing words unless the words that you actually speak are thoughtful and, in the case of what we're talking about today, gentle or humble. Okay? So it's not just if you talk less, you'll be better. It's if you think about what you say, you will typically talk less. And what you say will be more appropriate. And again, we tend to go on one extreme or the other. Some folks will wear you out waiting on them to get the perfect wording together for the perfect phrase of what they're trying to say. Other people don't think unless their mouth is moving, and so they're trying to discover what they're saying as they're saying it. And what they could have said in a sentence, it takes a novel. We tend to be somewhere in the middle of that. And so the balance is thinking, speaking, thinking, speaking. Proverbs 15:28. Again, it's going to be familiar with what we've been saying. The heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. Several we could hit here. Let's just go to Proverbs 19. We'll hit one more here. Again, this is the ability to be quiet until you've been able to think about an appropriate response when you're angry. Proverbs 19:11, the discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. That's what's typically going to happen whenever we decide that we're not going to respond in anger to someone who's angry with us. We're going to have to look over someone else's anger. It's going to take discretion in order to do that. And the writer of Proverbs here says that it's the discretion of a man that defers his anger, and it is to his glory to pass over a transgression. Again, that's pretty difficult, isn't it? That's pretty difficult. Especially whenever it is someone who is who we think has sinned against us, and maybe they have sinned against us. When it's someone who we think needs to be straightened out and we're the one to do it, it's hard to let that go. All right, last one here. Gentleness or meekness is forgiving your offender quickly and not letting bitterness take root in your heart. Gentleness or meekness is the ability, the discipline, the willingness. And when I say all of those, I don't mean that in a formulaic way. Maybe the willingness is the best way to say that. Of forgiving your offender quickly and not letting bitterness take place. How does bitterness tend to take place? Well, bitterness happens, begins to cultivate, as we mull something over in our mind again and again and again and again. Long before DVD players and VCRs came out, you had a little rewind button in your mind. And that's typically where we get ourselves in trouble with bitterness. We hit rewind and we replay the moment again and again and again. Only we tend to have an edit button to where we can replay it in our mind and say what we should have said or what we wish we would have said and how this person would have responded. But typically, whatever it is that we're bitter about or the thing that has made us angry stays the same, maybe gets a little more magnified. And unless forgiveness takes place, before we know it, there will be a root of bitterness that takes place. And bitterness is difficult. It's difficult. It's, again, it's a part of pride, and so it is blinding. Look in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 14. Hebrews 12:14. It starts out with the word follow. Again, that's our word pursue. Pursue peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Look diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. So, the first thing he says in verse 14 is we ought to pursue peace with all men, as it relates to what we're talking about now, and holiness, without no man will see the Lord. Then in verse 15, look diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you. You see, bitterness tends to want to hang on. Once bitterness has taken root, it tends to be pretty difficult to get over. It doesn't mean it's impossible. Obviously, you can get through bitterness, but once you've let that fester and once you've let that take hold, the end of the verse says, whereby many are defiled, and thereby many be defiled. That's not saying that many people tend to be bitterness. What that's saying is many tend to be defiled by one's person's bitterness. Okay, so your bitterness carries into more people's lives than just yours. And if you've ever known anybody that was bitterness, you can see how that happens. Bitterness, again, is taking a hurt. Someone has hurt you and someone has offended you, and you dwell on it, and you pet on it, and you water it, and it begins to grow and grow and grow and grow. And before you know it, as you're having just ordinary conversations, this bitterness is coming up. People know. People know about how this person hurt you and about how unfair it was, and it just continues to go and go. And the question is not, have you been hurt or has someone sinned against you? The question is, what did you do with that sin? What did you do with that offense? What did you do with that hurt? Bitterness starts out being kind of a, you know, we can see the kind of a self-serving deal. We'll get back at this person. Or I'm just hurt and want to talk about it. It ends up being a pretty enslaving thing. Before we know it, all we can think about, all we can talk about, is this particular hurt, or maybe the hurts of others combined. And so, obviously, the opposite of bitterness, the way that you avoid bitterness, is just through forgiveness. And when I say just through, I don't mean, come on, why don't you just forgive, silly? I just mean that's the opposite. Forgiveness. Forgiveness can be difficult, but we are instructed to forgive. Look in Luke 17. There's no such thing as a meek or a humble person who has harbored bitterness and refused to forgive. Luke 17. I'm going to read verses 3 through 10. Luke 17, 3 through 10. Take heed to yourselves. If thy brother trespass against thee, rebuke him. And if he repent, forgive him. And if he trespass against thee seven times in a day, and seven times in a day return again to thee, saying, I repent, thou shalt forgive him. And the apostles said unto the Lord, increase our faith. And the Lord said, if you had faith as a grain of mustard seed, you might say to this sycamine tree, be thou plucked up in the root, and be thou planted in the sea, and it should obey you. But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he is coming from the field, go and sit down to meat? And will not rather say unto him, make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself, and serve me till I have eaten and drunken, and afterwards thou shalt eat and drink? Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. So likewise, when you shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants, we have done that which was our duty to do. Now, Jesus talks about forgiveness here. This whole thing is connected. We learn a few things about forgiveness. Number one, forgiveness is granted and is only to be granted when someone has actually sinned against you. Okay? When someone has hurt your feelings, and it has more to do with you being sensitive than it does that they actually sinned. And what I mean by that is a sin that we can point out is this is a biblical category for sin. That's when forgiveness is granted. Now, that can be hard sometimes because we can get our feelings hurt and have it in our mind that somebody was way off base, and the reality is they did something that just simply was not your preference, but it was not a sin against God, and it wasn't even a sin against you. When that's the case, repentance has to take place on the part of the offended, and we have to be able to see things in the right way. That's a humbling thing to do, to be able to admit or confess that maybe we were just too petty or picky. Someone who's meek and humble will at least open up to the possibility of that. Another thing about forgiveness, and what you'll find here, sometimes the offended party has to initiate forgiveness. Look what he says. If your brother trespass against you in verse 3, rebuke him, and if he repent, forgive him. It doesn't say if your brother trespass against you and then he comes back and asks for your forgiveness, then you can forgive him. It says if your brother trespasses against you, then you take that trespass, you take that sin back to them and you rebuke them. And rebuke just means you bring it to their attention. You've sinned against me. It was offensive to me. You've sinned against me here. And then if he repents, forgive him. Well, that can be pretty humiliating too, can't it? I don't want to come back to you and say, you sinned against me, and you say, huh, what are you talking about? I don't remember doing that. And, yeah, you did it, and it was hurtful, and I've been thinking about it, and this is how you sinned against me. Brother, you know, I may have done that. I don't remember that. I don't remember thinking that, doing that, and we can look pretty petty doing something like that, can't we? Better to look petty than to be eaten up by silly bitterness, isn't it? Again, we're talking about not just something that builds an individual, but we're talking about things that will infect a church, things that will cause disunity in the church. So sometimes the offended party has to bring it up to the offender. Number three, forgiveness is costly. Forgiveness is going to cost you something. Forgiveness is going to cost you something. You do not get to get even with forgiveness. Forgiveness says, I'm going to absorb the wrong. I'm going to absorb the sin. I forgive you. I'm making you a promise that I will not treat you in light of the trespass or the sin that you've committed against me. I'm going to be gracious toward you. If I've forgiven you, I've made a promise that I'm not going to bring that back up in the sense of that's not going to dictate how I treat you. You can see why the disciples came back and said, give us more faith, can't you? Third, this is just in general. Forgiveness is not the same thing as trust. Just because you forgive somebody doesn't mean you trust somebody. Okay? Forgiveness is given and trust is earned. Trust is built upon somebody's character, what they've done, what they're in the habit of doing. It's not unloving to withhold trust from somebody who's not trustworthy. So forgiveness is not the same thing as trust. And then lastly, and this is where the story or the parable comes in that Jesus tells. Forgiveness involves an act of the will, not your emotions. Forgiveness does not occur because you feel like it's time. Forgiveness occurs because you, out of your will, you make a decision. You choose to act a certain way towards somebody. You choose to make a promise towards somebody. And so that's where the story comes in, the parable that Jesus tells. He said, who would hire a servant? And after they've spent all day plowing the fields and working the gardens and they come in, what master would say, well, you know what, you've been working all day, why don't you sit down and let me feed you? That doesn't happen. They come in, they fix the master their meal, and then afterwards they eat. And when that happens, Jesus says, does the master say, oh, well, you've done such a great job and you've gone above and beyond? The answer to that question is no, that's not what happens, because they haven't gone above and beyond. They've done what was required of them to do. Now, it's one thing to preach about forgiveness and to talk about forgiveness. It's another thing to actually extend forgiveness. And if you've ever been in a situation where you had to extend forgiveness towards someone who had hurt you in a really painful way, you realize there's a whole lot more to it than just saying, I forgive you, in the sense of you're going to have to wrestle with your own heart in those kinds of things. And if you're not careful, you can build it up and just like where the disciples were, and get in the mindset that God has called you to do something that's impossible. And to the contrary, he says, I'm not asking you to do anything special. This is what I've done toward you. And if you're going to be a follower of me, then it's just your reasonable service. It's just what you've been called to do. Someone who is pursuing meekness is someone who is striving to extend forgiveness to those who have offended them. And so that's the end of our message, our study here on meekness. Again, a gentleness of mind. I would just end the same way that I started. This is something that God has called us to pursue, but it's also something that ought to remind us again and again just how much we depend upon the power of the Holy Spirit. I can't think of anything that rings truer with humility, with meekness. The other ones were saying than the phrase of, with man, these things are impossible. But with God, all things are possible. We're talking about things that are supernatural. And so may God bless us in our pursuit of meekness.
Thank you for listening to this message. Our prayer is that you've been blessed by the messages and the daily devotional blog on sermon audio from Ripley Primitive Baptist Church. We would love the opportunity to be of greater service to you and your walk with Christ. In other words, we would like to get to know you better. Do you have need of counsel, of a home church, or can we just pray for you? Please feel free to contact us by phone at 662-837-8590 or visit our website at www.ripley.com. pbc.com